Welcome to another edition of Beeplecast, a weekly podcast that takes an honest and sometimes irreverent look at the state of open hardware, embedded Linux, and all things BeagleBoard.
Hi, and welcome to Beeplecast. I'm one of your hosts, Jason Kreidner. We'll be joined shortly by Gerald Coley and Jeffrey Osher-Mixon. We'll be getting together weekly to discuss what's new in open hardware, embedded Linux, and all things BeagleBoard. We welcome your contributions by leaving us any questions or suggestions that you might have by calling 713-234-0535 and leaving a message, or by visiting http://bit.ly/bcsuggest.
Hi, this is Jason Kreidner. I'm here with Gerald Coley and Jeffrey Osher-Mixon, and we're getting started with another edition of Beeplecast, and we're going to try to blast through this one this time. Jeff, Gerald, you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. So the first thing I think we have to go through is the news that we saw on the RSS feed over the last week. Lots of activity, I think, as in every week. We'll just try to handpick a few of the topics. We saw one about somebody had added an external battery case to their BeagleBoard.
Over the last several months, I've noticed that every now and then, probably once every 2 or 3 weeks, somebody will either ping me directly or ask on the mailing list about batteries and running off of batteries. The car PC folks have also wondered about DC-DC converters.
Yeah, this is something that we've talked quite a bit about on the hardware side as well. In reality, the board will take, you know, higher voltage. It'll take like 12 volts and run the board. The problem comes in for the USB hub. It won't take it. You need to convert that from whatever voltage you're working on to 5 volts so that the hub will be happy and won't turn to smoke. But that's something we've talked about, and hopefully here in the next 6 months or so, we're actually looking at a few things and maybe making some things available to allow people to hook different voltages on there.
It'd be great to have a little device or at least a pointer to a device that's out there now. I know that SparkFun's got a few, they've got a whole line of DC-DC converters that might be appropriate.
Yeah, but the complication here is, you know, basically it's driven by the hub. The hub does take a little bit of power. I think it probably takes more power than it definitely takes more power than the processor. So that kind of complicates things because, you know, we didn't want to add a big watt waster on there and heat things up by people hooking all kinds of weird voltages to it and it dropping it down to 5 volts and being noisy and all that kind of stuff because we've seen some issues with that. So, I agree. I think it's something that we're definitely going to take a look at and hopefully we'll be able to come up with a good solution and everyone's free to take a look at what's out there and see if you can get your hands on them and experiment with them and see how far you can get.
Well, I know the Beeplejuice is out there, and this is something I thought was pretty straightforward based on the fact that we could power off of USB because there's all these phone chargers out there, and that was what I had early used was like this Energizer cell phone charger with the USB adapter. But, I guess the current ratings, you know, what all you can actually do on the board depends on, you know, the software that you're running and the software is going to change the current consumed by the board, right? If you're turning on the USB.
Yeah, well, basically what I do is I split the power for the hub from the power from the board. So if you plug in power it over USB, then it's only going to power the board. It's not going to power the hub. So, you know, if you don't need the hub and USB, then, you know, you're good to go. But the only way to power the hub is to plug into the DC port. And so, you know, at that point, the hub's going to take a little bit more power because it's got the four hub ports, it's got the power to the ports themselves, and it's got the Ethernet, which also consumes a little bit of power as well.
Okay. Well, this individual out there found something from iSound, I think, for under $40 from buy.com. But I think that there must be a lot of things with the Beeplejuice. And it's surprising me how much this still comes up as a question about how do I power this off the battery. But I guess it's still not something that's well answered.
I think it fits in with a lot of people's project ideas. You know, it's such a small, lightweight, powerful board that only runs off of a couple of watts. It's, you know, even with other stuff attached to it, it'd be great to have something portable.
Yeah, I guess it's just odd that, I mean, it doesn't, because you don't have the direct battery connectors on it, that it's not obvious that it's pretty easy to run because of the low power requirements that you can run it off of batteries. I just find that just interesting to me. Also, cases. everybody's always interested in new cases. Kuhn put out some additional pictures of cases that he's making with his MakerBot this last week. Is everybody familiar with the MakerBot? Is that something?
Well, I definitely am.
I think our listening audience is probably pretty familiar with stuff like that.
Yeah, this is a cool piece of machinery. Can't wait to get one of my own. Mainly, but I think it's just, you know, with the little case that he's making, the idea that I can go and adjust this for whatever card that I make and customize it completely, I think is pretty cool. I love the special computing cases, and the ones I usually throw in my bag are like the doghouse ones, the metal case, but
it's kind of indestructible.
Yeah, those suckers are tough. They're built to take a licking.
Do you know if Kuhn is going to, is he opened up his files?
Oh yeah, he's uploaded them all to MakerBot. Yeah, absolutely. He's got them up on Thingiverse.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, Thingiverse is a great place.
So we've also got a new version of the SGX graphics drivers released. La-ti-da.
That's always good to have. So is that ready to go for all the different releases of Linux, or is there some additional work that needs to be done to get it in there?
So I don't think that it's still, I think we're at a case where patches are required for getting it into the Linux kernel. I don't think it's at a state where it needs to be, which is, you know, the kernel portions are all there and in the mainline, and the only thing that changes is, you know, the user space libraries, and that all changes to the kernel were just being done in mainline work. I don't think that's the case yet. Jeff, have you looked into the SGX drivers before?
I honestly have not.
Okay, maybe we should just edit this whole section out then, huh? I assume at some point this stuff will show up in Angstrom and Yocto and Ubuntu, and we'll all be happy, but for those of the people actually doing that stuff, there's an update there now. I know a lot of the questions I've seen on the mailing list and IRC channels have been people trying to get their BeagleBoard video output onto VGA, given that the BeagleBoard puts out just digital DVI-D signals, and how do they get that out to other VGA. So I think there was yet another solution for that presented on the in the feed this week, with a DVI-D to VGA converter.
That's very cool.
And for those of you that are wondering why the one that the BeagleBoard Toys folks put out doesn't work on the XM, when we did the layout on the XM, we didn't equalize the traces to make them all the same length. So that's the reason that the current one that they provide does not operate properly. So that's something I think they're planning. If I recall, I think they're planning to remedy that, but as of yet, I don't think it's happened.
And I know several folks have been saying, oh, well, it's DVI. Oh, I can just put on a DVI to a VGA adapter, and a lot of them are just trying to grab these mechanical, you know, wiring adapters.
Yeah.
Those, of course, can't work because there's no analog signals on the DVI-D port.
That's
correct.
You need
a digital-to-analog converter to actually get the VGA output working. So you need something like that BeagleBoard Toys VGA adapter or something like this one on the RSS feed, which is...
this in here, for those that are interested, actually takes the DVI-D, converts it back into parallel, and then from there it goes into a VGA adapter with a RAMDAX in it to directly drive the DV15-pin connector. So uses the TFP401 and as the DVI receiver and a Fairchild device to actually drive the VGA port. Very nice.
So, this is from FitPC or FitPC2 or something, the FitVGA converter?
I believe that's it. One thing that's interesting is a lot of people have little boards like this and little ideas and things that they've done, and they don't really have a mechanism for doing more than just the two or three that they've done. So, you know, if there's a lot of interesting devices like this, there's places that you can actually go to that are interested in helping people get these things into production to get them out to everybody else. So if anyone's gets a hold of this or would like to find ways to get a hold of it, maybe some things can be worked out to actually get it produced by somebody. I guess it really depends upon the person that created it and whether or not they're interested in going down that path or not. But there are ways that we can do this. So if anyone out there has an idea of something they've built and they want to actually do something with it and they don't have the wherewithal to, you know, build up, you know, 50 or 60 of them and make them for sale, then you can actually just contact me on the mailing list at gerald@beagleboard.org, and, I should be able to help you out and point you in the right direction.
Most kind of you.
Well, kind's not my problem. I try to help everybody out too much, and nobody takes care of me. But that's okay. All I need is software.
You have your beagle board to curl up with at night, huh?
Yeah, but I tell you what, some of those pins get kind of sharp, especially that JTAG. It's like waking up in the morning and finding an imprint on the side of your face with that 14-pin JTAG hitter.
These are not pleasant thoughts.
Makes for interesting conversations at the coffee house, though.
Next item up is the Kinect. So there was also some news on the mailing list. Take things a bit out of order here, but I know that there was some interest expressed by Mark Yoder's new, what is it, ECE 4? Well, it's a 400-level class now. I think last year it was a graduate-level class only, but it's a 497 class that are working with Beagle boards and looks like they've got some Kinects. Now, those Xbox 360 sensors that do 3D depth finding, and a lot of people have been hacking, and they're connecting those up over USB to the BeagleBoard, using that for some of their projects. Wetnik off the IRC channel did a blog post this last week, and now LibFreeConnect is actually part of the Angstrom distribution. You can just opackage install that, get LibFreeConnect, and start hooking that up to your BeagleBoard. So, and start Kinect hacking. Not a lot of setup.
Yeah, I'd read a report that said that the Kinect was the fastest-selling consumer device of all time. Hmm. They were selling like 133,000 a day or some ungodly number.
Hmm.
Nice. And every one of them needs a BeagleBoard connected to it in order to make it independent of that lowly Xbox 360. Why would you want to hook it up to that? All right. When you can hook it up to a BeagleBoard and do whatever you want with it.
Makes sense to me.
Also along the lines of students, the TI BeagleBoard Challenge design winners were announced last week.
Oh, yeah. Who won?
Yeah, it was the Smart Pillbox, actually the same one that had gotten picked up by the PopSci blog.
Oh, that's excellent.
I think that definitely went in their favor.
Yeah, I sat in on a lot of those office hours meetings, and I remember that that group was very invested. They seemed to show up pretty often.
Yeah, they definitely put some hard work into it, and I think some sparked marketing of their idea as well.
Oh, that's excellent.
So anybody not familiar with that, it's they utilize the OpenCV library to detect when you're picking up a pill and putting it in your mouth so that it has a visual verification that you actually took your medicine, and then it would start a timer to say when you need to take your medicine again. Fairly intriguing idea. Nice, simple implementation. You can pull down our code, run it on your own BeagleBoard. Requires you put green tape on your finger, though. Recognizes your face, though, without putting green tape on it. So I'm hopeful that a lot of these students, hacking around with the Kinect and with the OpenCV and these vision systems are going to get a lot of support from the communities here and Beagle in Google Summer of Code projects. So I think we'll bring that up more later, but. Each of these is like a sounds like they have a lot of potential for some advancement with the Google Summer of Code. Hopefully, Jeff, you'll be interested in joining and mentoring some of the students this year with Google Summer of Code. I don't know if you have any other efforts around that.
Can't comment on it at the moment. I know that at the Yocto project, we're also working on becoming Google Summer of Code organization. So we will have to, I'll have to see how all that goes.
Okay, great. So Yocto did, the Yocto community did manage to put in an application for being a mentoring organization?
We have put in an application, yes.
Fantastic. So Beagle Board also put in their application last week. So I think that the deadline for filing was the 11th to make an application for mentoring organization. And best of luck. We'll hope both projects get in.
Yes, definitely.
We also had some embedded developer. It's moving forward this project for cross-building without a let me try to read what the actual heading header is, but it's a CLFS.
Cross Linux from scratch.
That's the one.
It looks pretty interesting. I have not run across this before.
Yes, the step-by-step instructions for building your own customized Linux system entirely from source. Isn't every, well, I guess not every distribution is that way, but I would think that most distributions are focused on building from source. But maybe this one breaks it down a little bit simpler for you. I think none of
it. Yeah, it looks more like an educational portal rather than a source for tools and things. I also noticed that they were referenced by the O'Reilly book on building embedded Linux systems.
So you think this is more about understanding the details from the upstream projects, how do you build them, how you cross-build them, rather than putting together the scripts and tools like a distribution would traditionally do.
Right, exactly.
So one of the developers from that group, Andrew, has been doing some work. He's got some stuff up and running on his BeagleBoard now.
Oh, cool.
Good stuff.
It looks like there's a book also. They have a development and a stable branch for their a book, Download the Cross Linux from Scratch book. So that might be a really interesting read.
They need a BeagleBoard edition.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that wraps it up for news. I know when, Gerald, when you were looking on the blog, what has the news feed, we've got that Twitter badge over in the right. So it's always bringing up little news items, you know, that people are tweeting about. So certainly haven't had any time to go through and collect tweets to try to summarize our news for the week. But maybe we'll try to bring in some tweets next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Next on the required stuff is our list of upcoming events. I'll be at the Embedded Technology Conference next week in Costa Rica. I'm looking forward to that. Immediately when I get back from there, I'm going to be at the Indiana Linux Fest next weekend. That's March 25th through 27th. So we're going to have some hands-on training there for about a dozen BeagleBoard people. So I'm looking for folks to contact me and sign up, and it'll be free training. We'll bring boards, we'll bring monitors, keyboards, mice. We're using one of the local hacker spaces there to get table space and power. Just if you could let me know ahead of time, just because I think the space is going to be limited to maybe about a dozen people, be useful to make sure the room isn't overwhelmed, and be free hands-on BeagleBoard training.
That sounds like a great event.
Looking forward to it. In Indianapolis. Anything else coming up travel-wise for either of you?
Well, there's the Embedded Linux Conference coming up the second week of April, right after the Collaboration Summit. And you're going to be at that, too, as I recall.
That's correct. I think there's going to be
a
decent TI and a BeagleBoard presence there at TLC.
So do you actually maintain an apartment there in Texas, or are you just traveling?
Pretty much. I don't think I'm in Texas too often.
Maybe just have a box at the airport.
The one I'm really looking forward to, well, actually, I'm looking forward to each of them, but I'm pretty excited about Maker Faire coming up in May.
Yeah, that's in San Mateo, kind of in between San Jose and San Francisco, and it's always a really fantastic show.
Yeah. We went to the Detroit Maker Faire and the New York Maker Faire last year, at least I did. I have not yet been to the big one there in the Bay Area. I'm very much looking forward
to it. It is a big one, too. It is a zoo. The way to do it ideally is to get there as early as possible and plan to evacuate by about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because it gets to the point where you can hardly even walk around. There's so much interesting stuff there.
I don't think BeagleBoard.org has the MakerBooth application in yet, but we've got several local BeagleBoard.org community members that are looking at making that application. We just need to get it coordinated. There's also a lot of students that want to come and show off their projects at that show. So I'm looking for a pretty good BeagleBoard.org community turnout there, and I think it makes sense for us to get a maker booth out there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's usually a really large pavilion with all the booths. I know that last year MakerBot had a booth, and there were several different things, and there were Beagle boards everywhere, just in various different projects.
Any tin cans?
I don't remember seeing all the. I don't think I even got through the entire pavilion, but I don't remember seeing tin can there.
I think it's a sign of community acceptance of your platform and interest in putting, you know, the platform everywhere when somebody puts it inside of a tin can. I think it's a simply a mark of growth.
It means you've arrived.
You've arrived when you've made it into the tin can. So that's what I've got for the news and upcoming events. I think we had a couple of special topics for today. I think we had to go over the RevC hardware and software updates, and then we can chat about news on the boards and what we might want to do in the future.
Okay, well, I was going to jump in here. We've got the RevC hardware. It has been checked out and looks good. Now, when I say RevC, what I mean is the BeagleBoard XM RevC, and it's been checked out. There's nothing really major on here. We're going to the production rev of the silicon. We did make a tweak to the overvoltage protection circuit. We've still got a few people every now and then that are having voltage problems and blowing up boards, and not so much the whole board, but the power FETs for the USB port. So I prefer that there be none. So we made another tweak on that that hopefully takes care of that. And I think we fixed one other package footprint deal. The biggest changes from a hardware perspective was that we've added the ability to detect whether or not the board is being powered over the USB port, over the DC port, and we defaulted the power up to where the hub is not turned on, so the software will need to be able to turn that on to enable the hub. That way, for those applications that don't need the hub, it just isn't automatically turning on. Those in and of themselves aren't too difficult. The more difficult loop that we threw software was that, you know, as we change revision of the hardware, we also change the board IDs. So we've upped the board ID to the next configuration so the software can tell that it's the next rev of the board. Unfortunately, the U-boot that was there today
it's not my fault.
It wasn't anything it'd seen before and didn't know anything about the future, so went back to the Stone Age and decided to call himself something like a Rev A Beagle or something.
Yeah, actually,
probably. I don't mean XM, I mean Rev A.
Somewhere it probably really is my fault, but for not monitoring the mainline contributions to U-boot closer, I know the right way to get the software to work, which is, hey, if you get an ID that you don't recognize, default to the last known version that you were going to work with, so at least the software is compatible with new hardware as long as the hardware doesn't change. Other than the ID, but that wasn't the way the software was done. The mainline code by default will go back to, you know, as you said, working as if it was an older revision if a newer revision ID was there. We've got that fixed in the latest release candidate in Angstrom. So folks pulling that new software down that Kuhn's published on the mailing list, we'll get something that works with old versions of the board and with with newer versions.
So to close out on the hardware, we're continuing to build hardware. We actually were able to check out the boards and make sure everything was still okay. So we're in the process of building them as fast as we can and stacking them up. And just as soon as we get the final software release, we'll be plopping that on there and doing a final test and get these things out there as quickly as possible. So I'm not sure the exact time frame. It's probably going to be a couple of weeks before we actually start shipping this new REV. But like I said, in the meantime, we're continuing to build the boards as fast as we can and stack them up in the corner.
So there's no particular reason why I'd want this new revision over previous revision unless I wanted to adjust the cutoff power to my hub? Is that the only big feature?
Yeah, that's, you know, but basically, you know, this is not something where, oh, my God, I need to upgrade to the new version. Not at all. You know, just to give you a little indication, we work with the different revs of silicon, and there always comes a point where we can no longer get that rev of silicon. It's just they only make so many die, and when the devices are gone, then there's no more. So we have to go to the next die. So we just took that, you know, that fact into play and decided, okay, well, since we're going to do that anyway, let's just clean up a few things, and that's what we did. So there's no reason to have to move to this. You're not going to get any additional functionality or anything. It's just, as I said, you know, it comes up with the power off, and everything else is pretty much, you know, innocuous.
So do they fix any significant bugs in the newer version of silicon? Why is there
honestly, you know, I don't think so. It's been a while since I looked, but when I went back and looked, I didn't see anything that was a major gotcha that would, oh, great, we've got this new silicon coming, it'll fix that problem. There is one scenario that I think that it is supposed to fix. There's been an issue with the silicon for quite a while now, centered around being able to put the USB port into sleep, the USB host port, coming back out of sleep. Supposedly that has been fixed on this version of silicon. Any of those of you that are out there that are interested in having that feature, then it may require, you know, the newer silicon. I've only noticed probably two or three people, I think, total that were interested in getting that to work. And I don't know whether they wanted to get it to work because it was there or if it's something that they actually needed. But my understanding is that has been fixed in this version of silicon.
Okay. So I trade out the new software, the Angstrom distribution software, with this XM revision C, as opposed to pre-XM version C. And it's, I've been able to power the thing off of the USB cable now, so I don't get the infamous crash due to the unplugged interrupt service routine for the gadget driver. You know, normal, I think that the previous demo image that or validation image that shipped to the Beagle boards included a kernel bug that if you powered it up off of the USB port on the Beagle board that, you know, it would get a fault in the boot because of an interrupt service routine not being plugged. So that's no longer there. I'm also able to power up the board and run it off the power of the USB. I am doing it with the hub powered off. So I don't have my keyboard and mouse working, but I do have the network connection working, which actually surprised me. I wouldn't have expected the network to be on if the hub power was off. Is that the way it's supposed to work?
No, it should be powered off unless you're going through the OTG port.
I'm powering it up off of the OTG port, but no, I'm not doing networking over the OTG. I'm actually doing networking off of the, you know, off of the EHCI port and the Ethernet on the board.
Well,
so what I'm guessing what's going on here.
Yeah,
go
I'm
ahead.
Trying to find my cable now, and I can't seem to find it. Every time I clean up my office, I lose everything.
So this kernel is not patched to utilize the new ability to detect that it's powering off of the OTG port instead of the barrel jack. So I'm guessing it's still trying to power up the hub, but you know the limited power off of the USB host is maybe what's cutting that off. I don't know. All I know is it's working. Something to look into.
That would alleviate a whole lot of confusion that I see pop up on the mailing list from time to time.
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty frequent asked question. So why can't I power my BeagleBoard off of USB anymore? So getting a software out there that actually enables that will be nice. A few other software changes in this latest release candidate from Angstrom. I sent in some loading the kernel. So I've got a patch in there to load the kernel off of the EXT2 partition or EXT3 partition on the SD card. Lots of chatter going on about if that's really a good thing or not. Should the kernel be stored in the FAT partition or in the EXT partition? I have my thoughts.
So have you voiced those thoughts?
I don't think that FAT is going to be any more stable than EXT2 or EXT3. If I can eliminate the FAT partition entirely, I will be much happier. If I can get EXT2, EXT3 support into the XLoader or MLO, or we can switch over to the U-Boot SPL for booting. So this SPL is essentially performing the same function as an XLoader. I don't know if SPL stands for Special Purpose Loader or something like that, but it's maintained in the mainline U-Boot tree, and it specifically is designed for doing certain boot functions, like booting only from NAND or booting only from SD, but otherwise ways to make the bootloader much smaller, which is the reason that we have this MLO or XLoader in the first place, because that fits entirely within the on-chip RAM of the processor before the external memory is configured, and it's used to configure that external memory and then load the image from the next bootloader, being U-Boot.
I just took a look on Omapedia, by the way, and it looks like SPL is a second program loader.
Second program
and it is
loader.
I believe it actually is U-Boot. I believe it actually is XLoader.
Well, I think they're using the XLoader source to create SPL. I think that when you look at at least the management of it, I think it changes, right? So there is now a upstream for XLoader at gatorius.org/x-loader.
Mm-hmm.
But that's somewhat managed differently than the U-Boot community. All right, that's on dinks.de. So I think the code source base for XLoader is what's going into SPL, but they're not one and the same.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's going to be easier for us to pull EXT3 support or EXT2 support into this SPL and then eliminate the need for the FAT partition entirely. I've already got the XLoader MLO file to where I can just write it into the master boot record. And that solves a lot of the challenges of, well, when you format your card, you have to make sure that you copy the MLO file on there first. It just completely eliminates that problem by you're just going to write it to this sector. So you can do that after it's formatted. All the restrictions on how it's formatted are greatly simplified.
Is it easy to write that into the bootloader? To write it into the master boot record?
You just copy it into the master boot record. You just need to make sure not to overwrite the partition table or the FAT entries. So you need to look a little bit about how the card is formatted in that regards. If you just avoid overwriting the partition table, it's small enough that the first boot record entries shouldn't be until well after the MLO. Okay, I think I put you guys both to sleep on that. Just get asked these questions a lot, so.
No, that's a really good one. Yeah, that one is asked quite a lot on the mailing list and in IRC.
The other big change in the bootloader was the switch between boot.scr and a textual environment variables settings. So now instead of having this boot script, it has to be run through this make image tool in order to give it a signature for being loaded into to memory. You just put a text file on there, uenv.txt, into that fat partition. And instead of executing the commands out of it, though, it's all in the format of variable equals setting, variable equals setting. So it's all about overriding the environment variable settings. So now if you want to change the resolution of your BeagleBoard display, all you have to do is write into uenv.txt, DVI mode equals, and the resolution that you want, and you're done. Also going.
Does that file by any chance have a list of the valid DVI configurations? Because not all of them are valid, right?
They're not. It does not. There's a file in the Angstrom distribution. If you install a certain package, I think it's included in the demo releases. It's in /boot. There's a file that describes the various methods for defining the DVI mode.
Okay. It's good to know because we do get asked that quite a lot.
Yeah. I think the file may be ESS2 or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Can you guess that?
Well known. Yeah, that's an obvious one.
Anything else to cover on this RevC hardware and software update?
I think that pretty much covers it.
So shall we move on to any discussion, any interesting topics that we wanted to cover on the mailing list?
Well, over at Rose Coleman, Professor Yoder is starting up a class. I think we touched on that a little bit. So there's been quite a bit of activity there on that. There's some interesting topics on the Google Summer of Code project ideas. So if any of you got some project ideas you want to get out here pretty quick, then throw them out to the IRC channel or to the mailing list and get some feedback from the community and see if you can use the community to help you formulate and solidify your ideas.
Yeah, so the project selection committee or whatever you call the mentoring organization selection group, or I don't know what they call themselves or how exactly that is, but they're probably getting active now looking at all those applications, and sort of the cleaning up our ideas page would be a pretty important thing to do. I know that there's been a lot of IRC discussions. I think we're going to have a call with the last year's mentors coming up here soon to talk more about the ideas page. So hopefully get some good participation there. And anybody who's interested, I think the call to action right now is to update that ideas page.
That's a call to action for the mentors who've been previously there or for previous students or for prospective students?
I think it's for all. Prospective mm-hmm. students, if they start, they should be looking at what's on the ideas page and making suggestions to others. If they're not seeing the type of project that they want to do, to make sure that it ends up getting into the ideas page, because and that they're finding a mentor that's willing to support them on their topic. Just because a student gets up there and doesn't see the type of project that they want to do listed there now doesn't mean that they're not going to be able to find good mentoring support. So I'd encourage a student to go ahead and add their idea and let the mentors filter it out or use that as an opportunity to identify that student. So I'd say it's prospective students, prospective mentors, previous mentors should all be involved in editing that ideas page. And they can. It's a wiki. Anybody can go and edit it. Just use good rational sense, and your edits won't get erased. And hop on the IRC channel and hash Beagle and discuss it.
That does bring up a good point that it's the students who get accepted are very often the ones who interact with the community early, rather than just submitting an idea and letting the winds of fortune take their course. If you get onto the IRC channel and have discussions or on the mailing list and get yourself known, you're much more likely, I think, to be chosen. Because it shows a lot more dedication to the effort.
Absolutely. I can say with really good certainty that if they don't have if it's not easy to match them up with a mentor, that they're not likely to be selected, right? So we really want to have a mentor in the community that's ready to support them and make them successful in their project.
Most definitely. And we actually have one idea going on. It's being discussed on the mailing list right now. It's a car PC project, which kind of goes back to our DC-DC converter discussion earlier.
Right. So what is this project about?
Pretty interesting,
Is it about making it fit, think that the projects that are oriented on delivering open source software are obviously going to have a lot more success within the Google Summer of Code than say something that's a one-off, hey, I want to install a BeagleBoard into my car, right? That's not really a Google Summer of Code type of project.
No, it's kind of a sitting on the back porch summer kind of project.
So was what being discussed on the mailing list right now looking like it will really emerge into a good project that lots of people are going to be able to leverage that software and leverage what's coming out of this idea?
You know, I'm reading it, rereading it right now, and I think it does. It looks like the student who posted that has got a whole lot of ideas that even if somebody wasn't going to duplicate their particular effort, they might be able to use a lot of the knowledge they're coming up with. Things like heat production, coping with heat production, and using OpenGL.
Great.
And some of those build on things that we did last year with the BeagleBoard Google Summer of Code project. I know we had a student working on OpenGLES last year.
We had OpenCV.
OpenCV, right.
There was some utilization of OpenGLES, I think, in the XBMC project, but that was primarily focused on ARM-based optimizations for improving the compositing of XBMC. And then there was the OpenCV project, right, which was focused on optimizing the performance of those vision libraries. Okay. So let's get our wrap up here. What do we want to talk about in the future, and who do we want to pull on as future guests? I think that we can see just going through the news takes quite a bit of time, but hopefully we can. I think this still will be a lot more interesting if we can get some really focused topics, some interesting speakers. There's a lot going on with the Yocto and the state of OE Core.
Yeah, there's a whole lot going on with Yocto right now. Yocto is working on a release, and we've got a lot of testing going on. And in particular, there is a BSP for the BeagleBoard that is a part of Yocto that that builds and runs. So you can use Yocto to build a distribution specifically for the BeagleBoard.
So is there a specific topic there? Maybe somebody we can bring on to discuss some details. Maybe Richard. Maybe Kuhn.
Yeah, Richard or one of the engineers from the team. I'll canvas them and see what they think. See if anybody's got some time to do that.
Okay. So what are the things we think would make for a really good guest? Maybe we should have this. Maybe move this all offline, or is there some things that we can let our listeners look forward to?
Well, I think, we would like to get as much input as possible from the listeners out there, and if there's someone that you really want to hear from, we'd be happy to see what we can do to get them on and have a discussion with them. And we prefer it be someone that's pertinent in the Linux community. Definitely, I don't think we want to do any movie stars or anything like that. But I guess if you can find out some movie star that actually knows and does Linux as a hobby, then that might be interesting to talk about. But, if there's enough demand here, we can kind of use that to prioritize. We want to make sure that we bring people on here that are of interest. I know Robert Nelson's name has been mentioned, and I don't know if the folks that are using Ubuntu will want to give up 30 minutes of his time, but, those are some folks that have been talked about. So, we're welcome. Anybody's input as to, who we can get on here that would be of interest.
I was just going to say that I thought it would be good to have some of the folks from the Rowboat group come and talk about Android.
That's a good point.
That would be excellent. and have them bring their oars and spend
right.
some time with us.
All right. Appreciate your time, gentlemen, this week.
My pleasure.
You bet.
So that does it for BeagleCast. We'll be looking for your questions and suggestions. Hopefully to be included in the next week's BeagleCast. And have a great week.